Hi, my name's Sean Taylor. That guy over there touching the camera funny is Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. Welcome to Avatar, The Last Podcasters. Today, we're going to talk to you about this book, the title of which I had to look at to remember, because they're all so unique and special. This book, The Awakening of Roku. So here's our plan. We're going to do the spoiler-free thoughts, overview, review today. So you are going to hear what we thought of it to a degree, right? So that's kind of spoilery, but nothing in the book is going to get spoiled that shouldn't be. I think that's a good description. But before we do that, Chris, how you doing? What have you been up to?
I've been diving, you know, we talked about a lot. Diving more back into Yu-Gi-Oh! Just because I played Yu-Gi-Oh! With my son like 2 weeks ago, randomly. Like, I'll show you how to play. And then, that was the last time. I played with him twice. He liked it enough. We haven't played since. But then I was like, I'll play this game. And as you know, I'm back thinking about Yu-Gi-Oh! And strategies and how I'm an old man yelling at the sky because the game's not the same. And
you're so open-minded with everything else we've ever talked about. But Yu-Gi-Oh, nah, you get them monsters out of here.
What's up with these SY? Like, it's just the...
it's funny.
It's like, right now I'm hitting a wall. And I better not hit this wall too hard or I'll just stop playing. Well, that's what happened in real life. No, I wouldn't say that was happening in real life. I think we
still kind of played on, I feel like. But
Yeah. But right now, I'm facing someone who can just, like, easily summon, like, 3 7-star monsters. And then they synchro or SYZ from there. And then this monster has... The monster that's causing me the most trouble is this, like, 7-star SYZ monster. It has 3 different materials under it. And these are its effect. Once per turn... One thing, it has an attack of 4,500.
That's plenty.
Yeah. Jeez. And then once per turn, it can discard a material, negate all face-up effects of all face-up cards, whether it's a monster, trap, or magic card. And then your opponent cannot activate any cards during that turn either. So it's just like, all right, whatever, man. Like,
is it the Norse goat thing? What is it? Do you remember what it is, roughly?
I don't know.
Okay. And then have you opened... listen, you don't have to break your values. What I'm trying to get you to is at least to, like, your old UA setup. Have you bought packs and tried to... There's a list out there of the cards that you get in the various packs that you would buy. Have you gone to the pack shop yet?
Oh, yeah. I've visited the pack shop, but I haven't found anything. Well, and I get, you know, good stuff that I can use. Right now, I'm trying to hold on to the olden years, essentially. I'm trying to make the concept of a deck that is not a theme, that is just working different things together to have a strategy. Like, I like the opportunity to go down different avenues to victory. I feel like a lot of decks is like, here's the one avenue to victory. I can do this avenue a bunch of different times, but this is the one avenue to win. While, like, I like my deck to be like, whoa, I can switch it up. Oh, I'm thinking about this right now. Oh, you know what? Instead of that, I'll do this and that. Like, you know, adjust. I like making adjustments.
I mean, maybe playing the story deck is the way for you. Although, I guess the story deck's going to...
I was playing the story decks at first. So I was like, oh, you know, I'll learn. I can, you know, learn some new cards and stuff like that. And then it became too complicated. The story deck's got to the point where I have to understand the whole deck itself and every card within it to really make it run. And I'm like, I don't want to do that.
That's too strong.
That's too much. I don't.
I'm 30.
I'm 37 years old. I don't have time to be learning new stuff.
I the old stuff love works. This game. I love it unironically, like, no sarcasm. It, I like the nostalgia of going through the show, even if it's in, like, crappy clip cut screens or cut scenes, or you just tap A bunch of times. I love going through the show. I love going to the shops. Like, I love that I can't just build my deck. I still work towards my same deck because I like it, but I like that I have to, like, work for it and build towards it. So this deck that I'm starting with, which is a user deck, is objectively worse in every way than just using the story deck. Like, I should just use the story deck so I could have Graceful Charity and Pot of Greed because Yugi's a cheater. And I don't... it's a top probably 4 played Switch game for me. I love it. And zombies aren't meta. Don't let Chris fool you. They're not meta. They don't reference each other by name, which is the meaning of the word meta.
It's not the same game, man. It's not the same game.
It's not.
Too easy.
I also synchro summon. I synchro summon just like a bat at my whole deck. Just that's all it can do good is synchro summon. If it can't synchro summon, I lose.
Yeah. But that's why I've been there.
Flip side, Chris, I played like 10 minutes of 3 or 4 different games in the other Yu-Gi-Oh! Switch game, the one that has like old, like the collection of old games. There's like 10 old games on there. And I played like 10 minutes, 3 different games, everyone, and I was just like, this is stupid. Why wouldn't I just go play the better other Yu-Gi-Oh! Game? And it made me mad. Not mad. They're fine. There was a time and place where I would have been really impressed by those. And now I'm just, you know, it's hard to play those games when I've got a better one sitting there. So I also played some Yu-Gi-Oh! And I tried to play some... There was Game Boy Color ones that were pretty close to, like, a good experience. It was nice. Chris, let's do some no spoiler book thoughts. And you take this and run whatever direction and however you want to take it and run.
I would like to know first your overarching thoughts in high level. I'd like you go first because I pretty much know your opinion.
Okay.
I don't know the details of your opinion or anything beyond kind of one word. But
this go ahead, is a on its own merit is an okay young adult fantasy novel that is relatively the worst book of the Avatar novels, so the worst of the 6 relatively, and the writing style of this author of the 2 latest Roku books is different than FCE, the first author, is different in a way that I just prefer less. I do not necessarily think that means it's worse. I prefer it less. And similarly, it's about Roku and Gyatso, and we know what happens to them. And again, that does not mean that's worse. I prefer it dead. Less. So, yeah, dead, both dead in this book. Surprise!
They died. And spoiler alert! They died. In this book.
Yeah, wouldn't that be crazy if we could say that? But you'd know we're lying because of who it is. So I will say unequivocally that this was my least preferred of the 6 novels. And even compared to the last one, I found the characters of the last one maybe a little more interesting. Or at least I was a little more curious about where characters were going, except for one character in particular. So long story short, I didn't have a great time. It's fine. It is completely fine. Okay. It is not great.
Do you want to go ahead and do like a rating 1 out of 10?
One out of 10.
Or would you like to save that till... Okay.
Let's do that. Let's do that at the end.
Gotcha. Cool. I'm good with that.
We might even have to like, for reference, we might have to like throw out some, slap out some ratings for the other books just so we have like a frame.
I was already thinking, yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay. Okay, good.
I thought about this earlier, and I was like, "Well, do I rate the other?" All right, we'll finish with that. Okay, You're being more lenient than I thought you would be, to be honest. Just in our conversations about it, but you're probably being polite.
I'm trying, and I also don't read a lot of books, and I'm trying to keep that in consideration, that I'm not a good book critic. That's fine.
Yeah. I think this book is somewhere between fine and good. I went into it not, so full disclosure, I went into it not begrudgingly, but just like, all right, yeah, I'm going to read the book. Because one thing, the folks at Abrams Books were nice enough to send me a copy. One of them moved on to a different career, but the other email I had was still good. So shout out to my contact there. So I was like, you know, I will read the book, of course. I wasn't excited to read it, and you know, also again, it's Roku. And it's not that, I mean, Roku is my least favorite Avatar, but.
This isn't also helping either. This book is.
But Roku, the biggest problem with Roku, besides him being my least favorite Avatar, is that we know his story pretty well. Mm. At least I always felt like we knew his story pretty well. Especially when it came to some of these main characters in the book. We know how their life ends. We know how a lot of the middle of their life goes. You know, the characters they meet later on. And so, you know, that lessens some of the excitement and mystery of the book. But I think the book, I ended up actually liking the book. First half, I was like, holy crap, this is not great.
This is a slog, that first. And keep in mind, this is the shortest book of the series. This is the smallest book. And still through the first half, I felt like I was treading water.
First half, I was like, the writing has not gotten good. It's gotten worse. So, overarching, I like the book. Oh, one thing I do want to say is that when we went into the year, I said, hey, this is what I would want from the book. At least for it to be good enough that I won't use it as a prize at our panel coming up, at our trivia panel. And I will say, with that in mind, this book will not be a prize. It will be staying with me for two reasons. One, I like the book enough. Also, I like the front cover art, and this is the only thing I have Yatsu on it. And so I'll keep it for that main reason. If it was just Roku on here, I don't know if I'll keep it. But it got Yatsu on there.
It's got Yatsu, and I'm happy to see him, but he looks... Not his like sleepy eyes, which they use to describe him. I'm like, yeah, but he wouldn't be like that in combat. Like he would. He's not gonna have a little half smirk on his face in combat.
Yeah. Chris, but I like the cover art of the book.
Okay. Are you able to tell without spoilers, like what rough part? Maybe made it turn for you, kind of flipped it.
I know exactly when it happened. So okay. I'll say this. Part of my issue with the book, especially the first half, and I think for a lot of the book, is that I feel like there was stuff happening, but I feel like nothing was... I feel like characters were talking, but it didn't really matter.
It was motionless. It was just talking. That's it. It was just like dialogue in place.
Yeah, and like I feel like none of it was moving the characters anywhere. None of it was impactful or insightful. It was just them talking. And also, I think the ratio of like what they call it, set dressing, like you know, you describing the setting and stuff that you're at.
I would call it exhibition. That's not because I think it is wrong. I've just never heard that before. That's an interesting term. I just call it exhibition. Set dressing sounds more movie stuff, right?
Like I think I've heard it in that case of like stuff. I read a lot of stuff about writing scripts. Maybe that's where I heard it from.
Okay,
it's like
I don't read nothing.
we're pretty much just like, hey, we gotta describe the setting. It's like dark lit, big coliseum, whatever thing, drooped and dripped and cloudy day and whatever. So I feel like there was a lot of that in here. That's in the first half. And then there was a lot of just like descriptors of how do people feel without that actually coming across and the characters themselves. So I feel like the writing in general wasn't moving in the first half of this book. And then to me that there was a switch. It's right when a character opens up, I think, to finally opens up a little bit. And that's literally like halfway, I want to say like page like 127 or one, wait, no, the book is 280. So like 140 or somewhere around there. Somewhere around there. That is when I feel like the book finally started to make me interested in these characters and where like the characters are finally interested like in each other. Where I felt like there was, you know, some type of motion going on in the book.
Or emotion. It finally made you feel something. I agree completely with the turning point. I would still describe that turning point as like as like a singular high. Like it still dropped back. Like I might have developed better vibes with the characters thereafter, and felt better about them and been interested. But I don't know that the payoff was really there. So I'm glad that moment was there, and I'm glad that character is there and that we got to see this. But it didn't. The payoff was never there in a great way. Like the story, the underlying story, I still thought was meh. But I was glad that moment was there.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, we didn't talk about. I think the overarching story, right? And this is in the synopsis, or this is in the first chapter. There's a disease in the Northern Water Tribe. Roku's investigating it. Like, that's essentially the main kind of plot of it. And it's a interesting kind of thought, and we can get into more in the spoiler view. But, I don't know, for an Avatar world, for an Avatar world plot, I don't know, it wasn't that personal of a plot. The villain the main antagonist, I feel like really wasn't there. Wasn't present, like Jianju was present. Like,
the clear course, that's and present to, danger when we talk about like Ozai and they needed Azula, right? They need something on screen. The on screen clear and present danger for the majority of this book is that it's cold outside. That's the bad guy, which I agree. That sucks. It's cold out here right now.
There's a certain I know. Gosh. It's probably 2 degrees right now. There was a certain moment that I really liked that later in the book, that aspect of it. But to me, that's part of the present danger. And also just like the main antagonist was kind of just not involved with the danger that they were experiencing. They were involved in it, but they weren't directly involved in it. And my son, again, this is a person that, like, I don't know, there wasn't as much, like, emotional stakes to the book, and I think that, that was a negative.
Yeah, and I just, and I can't stress this is really hard to describe without spoiling, and I hope that you'll all come back next, 1 or 2 weeks to discuss it more. But the payoff at the end just wasn't good enough. It's not that it wasn't good. It just wasn't good enough for a big Avatar story, you know? But But I see that moment, and I hope I alluded to it even prior in my that I liked some character work in there, and that's exactly what I'm talking about too. And I think most people that read this book will probably feel the same way.
Like, it was just the moment where it felt like, okay, characters are actually being characters, and like, I don't know, to me that was a turn point. I mean, it wasn't like a, you know, after that point, it wasn't like, oh, here, it's great. It was, you know, a little bit of a roller coaster after that point, but compared to where I was at before, like,
that
I was
a
at, like,
sharp spike when you...
I was like, this book, like, I was so thrown off by, you know, while reading that first half, I was like, wow, the Kyoshi novels are just so much better than this, and the Yang Chen novels are so much better than this book. Like, and as I went to Reddit, it was like, hey, how does everyone else feel about this book? And some people were like, I'll just ask, how do people feel about the Roku novels compared to the Kyoshi Yang Chen ones? Some said they liked the Roku novels more, which is interesting. We talked about this, but we didn't record last week. That some of the ones I saw was like, oh, the Kyoshi novels, like, kind of play it safe, you know, following the hero's journey, and stuff like that, while the Yang Chen novels were more political, and this novel felt, the Roku novels felt, I forget what they said.
You could also say that, and I don't agree with this, but I can see the argument of by using Kyoshi or Yang Chen, it's also a safer subject. Like, it's kind of an untouched blank slate. Yeah. Easier to do, but also that, again, that's why we like it. Chris, I'm going to say something that I'm going to try really hard not to get in spoiler territory. I will say that at the end of the last book, I had a suspicion of what I thought that the stuff was that they found on the island that plays a role in here. I had a suspicion of what I thought it was. I was 1,000% wrong. 1,000%.
You know what's funny? I kind of forgot about that, the Lombok stones or whatever.
Lombok Island.
These are stones.
I think I can say this, and I think it will maybe give way to why I was disappointed in the first half of this book. Chris, I thought that was going to be obsidian, and I thought it was going to be like a really rare, really precious metal, where all of a sudden the Fire Nation has this in on this very, very rare, but like combat-ready material. But here's the catch. They need the Earth Kingdom. So, like, this is after the last novel, completely before this novel. But I was going to be, they got to involve some earth-bending traders or something to work with it, because they can't, it's so hard, they can't even forge it or whatever. And it's going to have some cool geopolitical warmonger weapons stuff going on. And then, like, so the first half of this novel, when I was kind of still hopeful and I'm just reading, I'm like, no, that's not where this is going at all. So upset, because it had potential. I was hopeful. I thought I had nailed it, but not even remotely close.
Before I forget, a non-spoiler thing that I did not like about this book, and I don't know if there was a way to do it differently. I'm sure there is, but there's too many POVs in this book. There are four different POVs. And I'm like, is this a Roku book, or is this just a Hey Who Wants to Talk book? Like
that,
yeah, I feel like it was just very weighty.
That is a I want to say again that I think that this author's style just does not mesh as well with me. I am not going to critique that I think it's bad, because I'm not the right person to do that. I just think it doesn't mesh. But that does bother me, because I think part of the challenge of writing a good story is like kind of establishing a POV in a time. For the same reason I don't like jumping around in timelines. Like, no, I want you to tell me a good story from a good perspective in a good way, and then don't cheat. Quit cheating. And I know there's, know the rules and then break the rules. But yeah, no, it kind of breaks your immersion a little bit.
Yeah. And also, I feel like he could have, like, there's a lot of short chapters. There's a lot of chapters. I think he did this in the last one, too. Mm. I feel like you could have just, like...
But Yang Chen also had some really... That second Yang Chen novel had some, like, several, like, one page. So not just this guy on the short chapters, but...
That's true, yeah. I don't remember it being a thing in the Kyoshi ones, but the... Yang Chen ones, I do remember thinking to myself, like, I think it was really short chapters.
Could have just put this over there. That would have been fine.
Yeah. I think it had a worse effect in this book, because there were different POVs with each different chapter. Like, sometimes, all right, you got me interested in this part of the story, then you switch POV. And then... Yeah, and then maybe went to a different POV.
Yeah. Chris, before we get to some like light ranking work, I'm gonna say, you know, mostly negative so far, but I'm gonna find some positives because there were, and that's important to me.
Yeah.
My big positives would be the characters. I like the conflict that they're trying to raise, this political conflict of, well, we do have resources and our people need resources, but they're finite and we're trying to grow. And then the rural versus city. I like that conflict. Maybe not as an Avatar conflict, but it's a relatable thing, especially in today's day and age more than ever. Yeah. And so I thought that was good. And then I liked, not really. Never mind. I don't really like that part. What's one more thing? I like some of the descriptive work of if you're in like the, you know, the northern polar, what do they even call it? Just the northern water. But just the whole area, right? And he does a nice enough, or the author does a nice enough job of like painting pictures of a place where it could get really boring really fast. Like you're in an Arctic tundra, and he does a nice job of painting mental pictures.
It's funny because like I hated some of his descriptions in the first half of the book. Like to me, I felt like he had to stick with the page count. And he was like, all right, let me add in some stuff and here and like that. But there was like two pages or something where he's just describing the north and the cold and stuff. And like, I was in it. I was feeling it. I was like, you know, I feel like I'm in this element. Like, that was,
we could be
really
talking about
writing
the same thing. Like, I just remember feeling really like, oh, you know, it could just be a wasteland. You could say nothing. It's like, no, I get it.
Yeah. One thing I really like, I like Yatso's and Roku's relationship in this one more than the last one. It was way more camaraderie and brotherly. Like, they feel like they are best friends in this one. Like, they have each other's back. I like their camaraderie a lot in this one. So much so that I went back and watched, today I watched the episode of Avatar and Fire Lord. It's kind of really cool watch to get into the contents of these books. But yeah, I like their camaraderie a lot.
I like their relationship. I think some of the writing of the relationship and, you know, actually a lot of the interpersonal stuff. I'll say the interpersonal stuff, the vibes were always pretty good, but sometimes the writing was like a little hammier than I would want. Like they, like in a way that just felt maybe like slightly younger audience than I would want, which again... I know we are talking about the audience of a kid's show, but typically, I don't know what age range of these books.
No, but it's interesting though. Like I've been thinking so much about just how dialogue is and how to write the dialogue. Like I was. This time I'm bashing on this movie, but they just released the script for the Superman movie, and I was reading some of the dialogue of it because I just want to get a sense of like, all right, how does dialogue look on the page compared to how it comes across on the screen, like. I think sometimes dialogue can be pretty plain, but when actors are acting it out, it comes alive. Also, when I try and watch, I was watching Avatar today. Like, I try and imagine, like, all right, how does this line look on the page? Does it look like it's like if you read that out loud to yourself, does it sound like good dialogue? And Avatar passed that test pretty much all the time. But there are some lines, I think, in this, I'm like, nah, I'm not sure that would come across on screen no matter how.
I think it's really easy to write down what you want the character to express and not as easy to write it in a way that character would actually say it.
I don't envy writing dialogue, because I think that's one of the weakest parts that I do personally is writing dialogue. Like overarching ideas, I feel like, man, I think I got a good rap on that. If I could just get someone in to just fit some dialogue and make it snap and stuff, that would be cool. So I don't think that's an easy task.
No, I mean, you're trying to take your words and shove them in somebody else's mouth. That's got to be one of the hardest things, right? Yeah. Like, you got to make it sound like that person. And that's something that hit me, especially in the first half of the book. I was like, that's weirdly just a little hammy, a lock. But no, there was some positives in there. A lot of the actual character things, like I said, the underlying conflict was good. Some good picture painting. And, you know, the growth of Roku and Gyatso's relationship adds a layer of intrigue in a way that a prequel, if it didn't have that, I don't know what would be interesting about this book, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. If it didn't have these two characters that feel like they don't belong together, but now they're friends, and
yeah,
that at least stretches your brain a little bit to think of, like, all right, I see how there could be more and more conflict as we go further into this story.
Yeah. Granted, there are some stuff that I'm like, gosh, Roku's a dumb character. And again, that is not necessarily the fault of the author here. That's just and that sounds, I feel like I sound like one of those horror bashers who's like, horror's dumb.
I mean, that's kind of what you're doing. You're pretty much doing that. But it's fine. But, this is our show.
Yeah. I forgot where I was going with that. But yeah.
I don't dislike Roku as much as Chris, but these books aren't making me, like, terribly more fond of him. Like, it doesn't feel like he's progressed. Like, obviously, okay, he added a little bending, but he still feels like a similar character as he was pretty close to the beginning of the previous book. Like, I don't feel like a whole lot of growth, or at least that I've grown a lot with him. No. But, yeah, that's all right. Chris, final spoiler-free thoughts before we try to fake up some ratings and rankings real quick?
I think what the first half was also missing was a really good inciting incident. I don't know if you know what that term is. Sean, you ever heard that term, inciting incident?
I wouldn't say I've heard it, but I'm going to gather from context. It's like, what's the thing that kicks them into action? What's the first, you know, if everything has three, every good story usually has like a three conflict resolutions. What's the first thing that gets them up the first hill? And it didn't feel like it had that either.
Yeah, it did. Like, oh, this is the inciting incident. Doesn't even feel that pressing, and the characters doesn't feel like it's that pressing. And so it made the whole first. I think that's part of what drives.
Chris just crosses his arms and said, "I am not incited." I don't. I don't. Do you feel incited? I don't feel incited.
Yeah. More like a. I can't think of.
Instead of a call to action, it's just like a spam call.
I think what the opposite of inciting. What's the opposite of inciting?
If you encourage someone to not do anything, if you enabled them.
A disenabled kerfuffle.
You nailed it. That's it. That's the one. That's great. I think I'm going to try to. I think I'm going to try to just rank the books from memory real quick. And I don't think it's going to be that hard, Chris, because for me, it's like, all right, the first Kiyoshi novel, that's a 10. Second Kiyoshi novel, that's a 9. First Yang Chin novel, for me, that's an 8. I think this is where we start to disagree. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Second Yang Chin novel, that's a 7. First Roku novel, that's a 6. This Roku novel, that's a 5. That's where I'm at right now.
Okay, well. Just a drop.
Yep, that's all it is.
First Kyoshi, that's a 9. I'm saying 9.5 just because I haven't read all the books.
How dare you? How dare you slander them?
Oh man, the second one. probably a, it's either 8.5 or 9. It's 8.5. Sure. Still, I don't know. There's something that, no, 9. Go 9. First Yang Chen, I'm going to give it 8. Second Yang Chen, I think it's better. I'm going to go 8.5 there.
Okay.
First Roku novel, I'm going to give it 6.5. Yeah.
Okay.
Second, I'm sorry, did I say first? First Roku novel.
Yeah, you said six first, and a half. 6.5.
Okay. This novel, I'm going to give a 7. I give a 7 to it. Actually, no. I'm going to give this, I would only go lower. I might go a 6 and a 6.5. They're kind of, I feel like these are two. Yeah. 6 for the first one and a 6.5 for this one.
Okay.
So I'm more like a roller coaster there.
That's
than a steep decline. So
our views are different, but there's still like a an identifiable trend. General trend.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Chris, I think that's enough for spoiler free, especially because I'm sure that spoiler E
will
turn into a longer conversation. So, hey, thanks for watching, everybody. My name's Sean. That's Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. Chris, if you're wondering, you start getting UA cards about halfway through the third campaign. It's early in the third campaign.
His name I saw is, one.
His name is Tetsu Trudge. When you beat that guy, he has all the UA cards, although it doesn't really run them, it just that's just where they fall. So get to that point, you know, if you can survive that long in the old-fashioned ways, then it might become more familiar to you. We shall see.
Yeah.
All right, thanks everybody, we'll talk to you next time.